This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from Tantalk Radio Network Studio in glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. This half hour is brought to you by Larson & Larson. They are my intellectual property lawyers, and they should be yours. Oh, well, before I introduce my first guest, I want to remind everyone that I would really appreciate it if you go to my Facebook page and like me and follow me along. I'm always updating the page with new and interesting authors that you should be reading. And if you have an idea for an author that you would like me to invite onto the program, send me a post there on Facebook and I will try to get them on. And also follow me on Twitter. And this is an exciting time for me. I'm working hard on developing a new web page. And this is a fun experience because I want more content. I'm going to have videos. I'm going to have a lot of exciting things on my new web page. And I am doing it myself. And so I want to give a big shout out to somebody I met online yesterday, Chris Huffnagel. If any of you writers are doing a web page, he is a wonderful resource for you to turn to. I was so thrilled. I'm sort of in the middle of this whole WordPress learning experience, and I was so surprised when I clicked onto his website, and he actually got online and chatted with me and gave me free advice, which is really wonderful, and I really appreciate it. And he's centered here in Clearwater, but of course, wherever you are in the country, he works online with you to set up a web page. And he's a really great guy because I tell you, just the little bit of information he managed to give me yesterday really helped me. So his name is Chris Huffnagel, and you can find him online. And I think he's just terrific. And now I'm going to turn to my first guest. This is really exciting because I love this book. It's called The Infinite Now, and the author is on the line, I hope. Mindy Tarquina, right?
Oh, I'm here.
Did
Hello.
I pronounce it right?
How are you?
Hi, Mindy.
Yes, you got it right. Tarquini.
Okay. I like that name. That's wonderful. You know, I was when I started this book, first of all, I love this period of time that the book is set in. It's just there after World War I. And I tell you, that is a terrific opening chapter.
Oh, the Scourge, that very, very beginning few weeks.
Well, no, that, well, the Scourge is a little a bit before, but no, the actual chapter where you introduce the main character, Fiora, and how you bring, it's really one of the best first chapters I've read in a long time.
Well, thank you. I so appreciate it. They're very kind words.
Well, you know,
that's probably the biggest thing.
That's so important.
To get it all out there.
Yeah, that first chapter, you have to make the reader want to know the story behind. You know, this whole show is about the story behind the book. And when I was reading that first chapter, I said, "Oh, I have to know. I have to know more about this girl." And so, why don't you tell us a little bit about it? She's an orphan, and she arrives on the doorstep of a gentlemen, and let's explain it from there a little bit.
Well, she's it starts at the end of September in 1918. It's in Philadelphia, and it's right at the very beginning days of the flu pandemic of 1918 in Philadelphia. Her parents have just died in the flu, so she's just been orphaned, and when the book opens, a neighbor has just picked her off the street, found her standing on the street, and has brought her to the door of these old man that she does not know. And she's the daughter of the local fortune teller. Everybody's afraid of her. And this old man is the only guy like brave enough to stand between her and an orphanage.
And there is where the mystery begins. I, as yes. I said, I love the setting It's a fascinating period, and so many people don't know very much about this flu. It was quite an amazing and disastrous event in history, and that people don't know, I think, enough about.
No, while I was doing, I was not doing research for this book. I was actually doing family research, and I found a great grandmother who had died. I found out she had died, and it was during this period, and I, remembered something. Like, didn't I see something on NPR about this or read about this someplace? Because I was going through death certificates just looking for hers, and it started out with, the typical deaths, heart attack, cancer, whatever, childbirth. And then one after the other, as I turned them up, they were all pneumonia, and many of them were subsequent to influenza. And it was just one after the other, after the other, after the other. So I go back, and I start doing a little research. What was this thing that had happened? And it's amazing to me that so few people know about it. It really was called the forgotten pandemic, but it's because of the time period it happened in, which was at the end of the war, and everybody was focused on the war, and it just got lost. It got lost in the news, some of it on purpose. The government was, the papers were involved in voluntary censorship. They didn't want to write anything that wouldn't be considered patriotic or might be contrary to the war effort, and that included a flu that might keep everybody home from work and not going to their war industries to help, bring it home to an end. So it was just this perfect storm of circumstances that caused it to be so bad in Philadelphia at the time that this all happened with this girl.
Well, across the country, how many people died?
I don't know exactly in the United States. It was, it affected 3% of the world population. It probably killed 3% of the world population, and it affected about a third of them. So at the time, I think the world population was around 1 billion. So it was a very high death rate. I think 20 to 50 million worldwide died.
Well, yeah. And
the interesting thing about it, was that it was homegrown. From what we can tell, now there are several theories as to how the flu started. And the one I chose to use for the book was that it started in Kansas on a hog farm, which is like shades of that movie Contagion. And it might have just stayed there in this very far-flung community. The doctor, treated his patients as best he could, and it might have just stayed there, except there was an army camp nearby that was, training soldiers and then putting them on boats and sending them to Europe, and they think that that's how it got started, was that somebody went home on leave, and then he came back to the camp, and one morning the camp doctor woke up, and there were just dozens of soldiers outside his tent, in the sick tent, very, very sick with the flu, and starting to die. And that's how it spread. They ended up putting guys on boats, they sent them off to Europe, and it just kind of spread across the country, and it spread across the Europe. And at the time this book opens, it's come back to visit. It sort of died down in the United States, it became bigger in Europe, and then we brought it back home, like this parting gift, and we brought it back home. So at the time that the book opens, it's actually been just brought down to Philadelphia, probably from a boatload of sailors that have sailed in from Boston.
Now, this book has a little bit of a, as you said, she's the daughter of a fortune teller. And so there is some paranormal events in this book.
This girl's, she's got these goals and she's got these ambitions. She's very much a modern woman of the time. Now, she's only 16, but she has plans for herself. And she's the daughter of the local fortune teller, and the only thing she has from her mother is this magical curtain that she knows her mother somehow uses to tell fortunes, but truthfully, mom never showed her, so the girl has no idea how to work it. And she takes this curtain and she brings it home, and she's trying to figure out how to work it, has no clue how to work it, but she's going to get a job, and she's going to earn money, and then she's going to go to typewriting school, and then she's going to get a job in Center City, and she's going to take the trolley every day, and then she's going to go to Atlantic City all by herself. Now, to modern girls today, this might not sound like such a big deal, but in those days, That was a very independent young lady for her time. Plus, she's educated. She'd gone to school, so she had a little more education than most. The issue that she has is she's an immigrant, and her parents have died. And the old man tells her, you know, very shortly after she comes to stay with him, that he cannot find any evidence that her father ever filed what's called a petition of intent, which is a paper they used to file that said, yes, I'm going to become a citizen. And that puts her immigration status in a very precarious position. She has two brothers that are off fighting the war. And they, you know, the old man writes to them and they get right back to him and say, yes, you can be her guardian. Problem is, they're not citizens either. Plus, they're also not of age. And at the time, the age of majority was 21. And the old man says to her, you know, I don't want to ask anybody. I'm just afraid to go to anybody about you because I don't know what they're going to do with you. I don't know if they're going to put you in an orphanage. I don't know if they're going to deport you. I just don't know what they'll do. And so she's out there trying to find a job and you know, but nobody will hire her. They're all afraid of her because she's the daughter of a local fortune teller. So that's the situation she's in when she's trying to figure out how to work out her mother's curtain.
And with all of that,
neighborhood is,
with all of that, you weave a very compelling story, a fascinating story. And here you're doing start getting interested in the flu epidemic. And how did the story, the characters come to your mind? Because they are so beautifully drawn. Of course, there's the Italian aspect to them, which maybe comes from your background. But it's really, I mean, did it just sort of pop into your head, the idea of this character and the story around it?
Well, they were two different, they were like kind of like two different things that happened and then sort of melded together. I had had an idea, don't even ask me, I mean, you know, ask an author, like, where did this idea come from? I had this idea, this character woke me up one night and she, I kind of woke up and she was just telling me, you know, I was just orphaned and, you know, somebody left me at this door, this old man I don't know, and I have all these ambitions and all these things I want to do, and I'm nervous, but I'm also brave, and I just kind of have this voice in my head of this girl. And, you know, mentally, I think I was thinking, oh, okay, this is taking place someplace in Italy, some village in Italy, you know, this is taking place. And I even wrote a paragraph or two, and it was actually from the viewpoint of the old man. At the beginning that I first thought about this. And then concurrently, I was doing all this family research. And I found the reason I was looking for my great-grandmother, who at the time I didn't even know her name, was because I was looking for my grandfather. I had found him on the 1910 census. I found him on the 1930 census. I couldn't find any hint of the family in 1920. And I was very confused by this. He emigrated to this country early, you know, 1900s as a young boy. So I actually ended up turning over page after page after page of census records looking for him, and I found him, and it was such a shock. He was in an orphanage outside the city, and he was only like 10, 12 years old. And my heart broke. I didn't know what had happened. I found a marriage record for my great-grandfather marrying, like 1920 or 21 or thereabouts, like marrying another woman. And I was so confused. So I ended up talking to family members and found out that my great-grandmother had died. My great-grandfather had four children. He was grief-stricken. He was overwhelmed. They ended up farming out the kids. My grandfather ended up in an orphanage. And all I could imagine was, my God, to be that age, you know, to suddenly lose your mother and lose your family, too, just kind of stuck someplace and you're far from the neighborhood, you know. You're just in a totally unfamiliar place. And the two just kind of meshed at that point. I found out about the flu, and I thought, you know what? Here's the framework for my story. Because as authors, we start with an idea, with a character. We start with what we call an internal thread. You know, what happens with this character? Where does the character start out? Where do we want the character to end? And then we find that framework that will work. And this just works so beautifully. And the characters themselves are, I don't know. I know Philadelphia. I know this area. I used to sit at the table with my elderly aunts and uncles, and they would tell stories of this time. This was their time. They were young, and they were eager and, you know, excited. They had, you know, coming to this country and starting new lives. And I remember them telling these stories around the dinner table. You know, I was very, very young, and that's where I drew. That's where I drew for ideas of the characters.
You have done a beautiful job.
Thank you so much.
With the history and the characters are done so well, and I think it's absolutely charming book. And I, thinking about this flu epidemic, that I'm sure, you know, so many people are interested in what you were doing in Ancestry.com kind of events, looking for their family. I'm sure now people will pay attention and say, you know, did my relatives die from the flu? So, and I'm sure many will find that they did.
I think, yeah, there's so many surprises at Ancestry. It's it's kind of a rabbit hole, because, you know, once you start looking, then you look at something else, and then you look at something else. And, you know, I spent so much time in there. I learned the neighborhoods. I learned the names of everybody who lived in the neighborhoods. I learned where they were all from. I learned, you know, all their occupations. There's just so much more information there than just my family, what had happened. Because I was forced to kind of look further than just their names, because I was looking for them and I couldn't find a record. I didn't know why. I didn't know if the names had just been badly transliterated or what. So yes, I think it's you build up a picture of the area and of the neighborhood when you spend that kind of time in that sort of research.
And you have put it into your book in a beautiful way. I highly recommend this book for anyone. I think it's a great read, and you've done just a terrific job.
Well, thank you so much.
Okay, and do you have a website that you want people to go to?
I do. MindyTarquini.com is my website, and from there you can find my social media. You know, please like my Facebook page. You know, and reach out to me and say hello. You know, writers live for this. This is the reason we write our books, you know, is for this kind of contact with our readers. I just absolutely adore it.
So are you working on something new now?
I sure am. I have a new book coming out in September. The title is Deepest Blue, and it's about a magical city that's seen only at twilight.
Okay, so you have this enjoyment for just a touch of paranormal, a little mystery here.
You know, everything I write does. You know, my first book did. It's about a South Philly Italian gal who remembers all her past lives.
Hindsight.
I always think I'm going to, like, write, like, a straight story. You know, you're going to do it straight this time, Mindy. You're just going to have this normal person who's going to go do normal things. And then something always happens. Somebody starts to fly, or, like, in the case of Infinite Now, she puts the whole neighborhood into a bubble of stagnant time. You know, just something always ends up happening in my stories. And I always swear, I didn't do that on purpose, but that's what happens. And then I have to write it from there.
Well, sometimes the characters take on their own persona and their own life, and they want you to do what they want you to do.
Oh, the best characters do. They absolutely do. They never behave, and they never do what you think they're going to do the first time you think about them, and you have it all planned out. And, you know, they just go off and do whatever they want to do, and then you're kind of stuck following them around instead of, you know, them doing what you tell them to do.
And I enjoyed Hindsight. It was funny. I pronounce her name, Eugenia Panisporci.
Eugenia Panisporci. And full disclosure, Panisporci is not an Italian surname. I just sort of had this idea in my head, like, oh gosh, I didn't want to use like a real Italian surname, because I thought, oh gosh, I don't want anybody thinking that I think their family, this is the Blessed Virgin Mary. Don't ask me why that was in my head, but it was. So I just didn't want to be disrespectful to any particular family. So Panisporci, I think, means like dirty rags or dirty bread or something like that in Italian. I forget.
Yeah, that's what Dirty Bread, I think. I thought, that's a funny name. Exactly. That's a funny name. But it is also a very interesting book. So people can find the new book, which is called The Infinite Now, wherever books are sold, Barnes & Noble, and online at Amazon and wherever. And they can go to your website and find more about you. And once they finish The Infinite Now, they can go back and read Hindsight, because it is also a fascinating book.
Yeah, and it's totally different from Infinite Now. It's just totally different. Anybody reads Infinite Now and thinks, oh, I'll go see your other book. Yeah, like a lot of authors sometimes tend to write the same sort of a thing. All my books are totally different. My readers have no clue what I'm going to give them next.
Okay, well, I think that's part of the fun of getting to know an author. So I want to thank you so much for being on the show today. It was a joy for me to talk to you, and I just hope that you have a wonderful Christmas time, and I'm sure that your family is very proud of you with this book, because it's a really, really great book. Thank you.
Oh, well, thank you so much. Thank you for having me, and happy holidays to you, too.
Okay, so it's Mindy Tarquini, and the book is The Infinite Now, and get it. It's a great read. Thanks, Mindy. Bye-bye now.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, good. We're going to have a few commercials, and then we're going to come back. I've got another writer coming up. This is exciting. I have lots of things to talk about today.
This is the TAN Talk Radio Network.
Are you an author? An artist? An inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660, or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, inventor of MyPillow. My employees and I would like to thank you for making MyPillow possible. Years ago, when I invented MyPillow, I thought I was the only one out there with problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat, I'd flip-flop all night, or wake up with a sore neck or headache. So that's why I invented MyPillow. You can adjust MyPillow's patented fill to your exact individual needs to help you get to sleep faster and stay there longer to get the quality sleep you need. I back it with my 10-year warranty and my 60-day money-back guarantee. And now to thank you, I'm bringing back my best offer ever. Buy one of my MyPillows and get another one absolutely free.
Support Joy on Paper and local authors. Go to MyPillow.com and use promo code PATSY. PATZI.
This is the TAN Talk Radio Network.
Patsy with a Z, and I am back, and I have another guest coming up in a minute, and I just want to remind everyone again, it is Christmas time, and it is the perfect time to buy a MyPillow and help support Joy on Paper. As you know, everybody on radio is selling MyPillow, but all of those big people have enough money for right now. All I need you to do to support Joy on Paper is to use my promo code PATZI. PATZI. That's me, Patsy with a Z. And that way you are supporting all of the authors that I of course interview many great best-selling authors and all sorts of famous authors. But what I also like to do is I like to do a nice mix of adding independent authors and authors who are self-published or working with small publishing companies. But I need your help to support Joy on Paper. And right now, MyPillow.com is offering that wonderful BOGO, buy one, get one free. And all you have to do is go to their website and use my promo code PATZI. And it's a great deal, because they are selling these pillows. I noticed they're selling them in all the stores, but you only get one. And if you order it, using my promo code, you'll get two. So it's a wonderful deal. And now I can turn to my next guest, Kathleen. I think I'm pronouncing it right, Opiela. Hi, Kathleen, are you there?
Yes, I am. And you did pronounce it correctly. You're probably one out of 100 people that ever does.
Well, I love the name. I think it's really cool. It's nice. I like it. So I am so happy to have you here. We're going to talk about your book, The Ruby. So tell me, you know, how long have you been writing?
I started about 4 years ago. This is my first book, and it took me 6 months to write the book, but then an additional 3.5 years to edit it.
Well, that's the way it goes. It's so funny. I get quite a few writers who will come to me and they say, "I finished the book. It's done, and now I'm just waiting for it to get released." And I say, "I don't think it goes. It doesn't go that fast." You have that process there of the rewriting, right?
Well, my editor told me that I actually had two books, so we didn't use the manuscript in its entirety, but I am writing a series that's called The Assassin's Wake, and the remainder of the book will be the third book because I've already started the second book. It's called The Jewel Cross, and it will lead up to the suspense of the third book.
Well, it's nice. I know that one of the things that you do, you're interested in taking private pilot lessons, correct? Are you doing that?
Yes, I did that. I did that in the 80s.
And martial arts?
Yes, I did that probably in the 80s.
And boxing. Well, you did a lot of things. And so you can bring all of this stuff into your books, right?
Yes, if you're alive long enough, you experience so many things. You know, life is a learning experience.
So it is a good idea, actually, to have a series, because when you get a good idea for a character, if you can keep it going for years and years, sort of like Lee Child and Jack Reacher, it's a nice deal, right?
Well, when I was younger, I loved Agatha Christie, and I read every single book that she ever wrote, and I just love Hercule Poirot. And when PBS made a series out of it, I bought every single one. I like a mystery. I like something that has twists and turns, and that's probably why my book is so fascinating, because I've gotten feedback from people that have read it, and they read it within 48 hours. They cannot put it down.
Well, that's true, because I actually read it much faster. I think it took me.
Thank you.
Well, I read fast, but still, it took me, I think, like 6 hours, and I finished it. And I found the character that you have developed very interesting. So tell us about your main character and what the sort of premise is for this first book and that you're going to carry on in the next book.
Well, Rocket, who is a female assassin, decides that it's time for her to retire. So she's going to do one last job and make enough money so that she can do that, because she feels like her luck is running out. She's used up 9 lives already, and she doesn't want to work on the 10th one. So she gets involved in a government task force, and actually she finds that she has a different side to her personality, that she's not all dark and evil.
And that is the premise for the story. And tell me, we start with her. She's already an accomplished assassin. There's going to be a lot of backstory, I think, that you can eventually write about, too.
Yes. Yes, that was in the manuscript. There's so much. I like psychology. I've studied psychology. I find it fascinating. I like to observe people. I could sit in a hotel lobby and watch people come and go and just think about, you know, what kind of person are they? I just find people fascinating, interesting.
Well, that was one of my, you know, that was one of the favorite things that I did when I lived in Europe. I used to just I loved sitting in hotel lobbies and watching the people come in, check in, and all the dynamics between the ebb and flow of people, and try to imagine their stories too.
Well, then you know what I'm talking about. I think that is a key personality trait of a writer. We like to observe.
And now, when you started this book, you already had sort of the idea of what you wanted to accomplish?
No.
No.
No. It was the most indescribable experience I've ever had in my life. I sat down at my computer and I started to write, and it was, I watched my fingers typing, and it was like my fingers had a mind of their own, and what I was writing, I had no idea that it was, that I was even thinking it, and I would sit there and write it and say out loud, I would, all by myself, I would just say, oh, that's good, where did that come from? It's like those T-shirts with the portrait of Shakespeare on it, and underneath the caption says, it wrote itself. That's basically how this book came about.
Oh, that's exciting.
It's like it came out of my subconscious or my spirit. I don't know. I know that sounds like woo, and I'm not that kind of a person, but it was really strange.
Well, of course, so sometimes what happens is if, like you say, you were a great reader, these things do build up in you. You're not even aware of it, that you're always sort of having an idea in the back of your mind.
That's true. And those books are the only fiction books that I ever read. I read how-to books and how to put a window well in your garage window, things like that. I'm very handy. And I read books on psychology. My library has so many cookbooks, and just, I'm a very practical person, so everything I read is practical. And the only fiction books I ever read were Agatha Christie and two Stephen King's novels, because my close friend gave them to me and she enjoyed them and I read them, and yeah, they were good, but.
And then you always had a dream of being an assassin. Oh, well,
you know, it's funny because I was on a dating site, and because I'm a widow, and
yeah, I hope.
When I would post, you know, that I was writing a novel about a female assassin, the first question that the man would ask, "Well, is it a biography?"
That's good. I like that. That itself makes a premise for a book.
And basically, when my husband passed away, that's when I started to write, and I reinvented myself.
And became an author of I think this, you know, it's funny, when I was reading this book and I was thinking, you know, it does take sort of a mindset to come out with the idea. You know, Jack Reacher, you know, with Lee Child came out with the idea of Jack Reacher because he had gotten fired from his job. When he was on my program, he was talking about how he was so angry. He was 39 years old and had gotten fired, and so unexpectedly, and he had no money, and he was in a bad mood. And so when he sat down to write Jack Reacher, he didn't want all that extra stuff. He didn't care about Jack Reacher's background. He didn't care if he had girlfriends. He didn't care if he had, you know, psychological. He just wanted to kill people. And so that's the kind of mood he was in. He just wanted to go someplace and find some bad people and kill them. So that's really how Jack Reacher was born, from really a bad mood.
That is so interesting. I think the reason I sat down and wrote was because I was going through such a overwhelming grief period in my life, and I found writing very cathartic. It was like the characters that were coming out on the page were like entertaining me and taking my mind off of reality. You know, it was kind of like just go into denial and create a different world for yourself. And I would get up in the morning and make my espresso and sit down at the computer in my pajamas and then realize it was 6 o'clock in the evening and I was still in my pajamas writing.
Well, you know, Mary Higgins Clark started writing when she became a widow, and she came out of desperation, having many children to support and having no resources, no money. And she started writing at 6 o'clock in the morning, too, so that she could make enough money to support her children.
Well, I never even suspected that I would ever publish this book. But my sister, who was a school teacher, who when we were growing up, we didn't know what she looked like until she was about 23, because she always had a book in front of her face and she was reading. So I sent her the manuscript just because she wanted to read it. And she's the one that encouraged me to publish it. She's like, I have a stack of books here and your book is better than these books. And I'm like, oh, come on. But my sister was always, you know, to the point with me. She didn't sugarcoat anything. It would be like, I don't like your hair like that. What are you doing with those clothes? So I thought, well, you know what? She's serious. And that's when I decided to do it. Unfortunately, she passed away before I ever, you know, got the book published. But I'm sure, you know, she's up there looking down and thinking, well, good. I'm glad you finally listened to advice from your older sister.
And you mentioned her in your dedication, and I think another sister too, right?
Yes, both of my sisters passed away several months apart. First, I had a series of, I was caregiving for a lot of family members, and my mom passed, then my father passed, then my husband passed, then my brother-in-law passed, then my sister Joyce passed, then my sister Gail passed, all within a few years. It was just like one after the other. People were starting to be afraid to be my friend because they were calling me Job. They were like, what else bad can happen to you? And I'm like, that's about it.
I think that's about it, because now you are making a real turnaround here with The Ruby. It's a good read, and I think people will enjoy it. And I think people will look forward to the next book, because you have come out with an interesting character and an interesting, and that's the most important thing. You want your readers to be invested in your main character and to want to know more of the story. And I wanted to know more backstory. So I have one of the things is, and it's popular now, they come out with these prequels. So they go back in time and start from the beginning, you know, from her childhood, and we'll learn all sorts of things about her. So you have many possibilities here, and so many wonderful things that you can work with. And I think it's always fun, I think, to see the first book in a series. I had a privilege of another author that who had appeared on my show. I saw her first book, and I thought, gee, that's terrific. And she's now up to her eighth book, and she's getting better and better all the time. And it's just, it's wonderful to see that development in a writer.
That is. Well, I had really the best editors. They worked with me for a year, and they were so patient, and they shared all their wisdom and experience. And when I would get to a point where I didn't understand what they were wanting me to do, they would just keep, you know, trying to explain it. You know, sometimes I'm like, I don't understand what you're telling me, but if you hang in there with me, I'll eventually get it. And they did. They were awesome.
Well, I think you've done a great job. And the name of the book is The Ruby, and it's by Kathleen Opiella. And it's available wherever books are sold. And do you have a website yet?
I do. I have an author page. It's author Kathy Opiella.
And people can go.
And I'm also on Go Read.
Okay, so people can follow you. And Opiela is spelled O-P-I-E-L-A. I like that name. It's a nice name.
Thank you.
Unusual and something that people will remember once they see it. It's the kind of name, you see it once and then you never forget it, which is nice.
Well, thank you, Patsy. It was a privilege talking with you today.
Well, I'm so happy. I always love to talk to authors when their first book comes out, and I'll talk to you when the next book comes out and the next one and the next.
Okay. Thank you.
You can just schedule your release date. Whenever you have a release date, you send me in advance, and I will book you, okay?
Oh, thank you so much, Patsy.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today. It was a joy to talk to you.
You too. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye. Okay. Well, it's fun when somebody comes out with their first book. Now, we're going to do a little book buzz because I haven't done one for a few days because the last few shows because I have been so busy. And last week, of course, it was just wonderful to talk to Mystery Writer of America Grandmaster Lawrence Block. And we had that little relay interview there for him. So we will just do a book buzz, right? I'm looking at Big Ed in the control. Okay.
This is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper with Book Buzz. Fans of cozy whodunits and lighthouses, here is the buzz for a cozy that has been on the top of the charts, The Lighthouse Keeper by Cynthia Ellenson. Dawn Connor's parents are famous for finding historic treasures, but she has a knack for losing things, her job, her boyfriend, and now her reputation. Thanks to a mud-slinging expose, Dawn's late great-grandfather is assumed guilty of stealing silver from a century-old shipwreck. Hoping to clear his name, Dawn returns to Starlight Cove, her hometown on Lake Michigan, where the doomed vessel sleeps beneath the beam of a ramshackle lighthouse. Her plan, remodel and sell the lighthouse while untangling the perplexing family mystery. Neither task is easy, especially once her well-meaning parents and the quirky locals, including nautical researcher and Starlight Cove's most eligible bachelor, Kip Whitaker, get involved. As she pieces together the truth, Dawn's once-shattered heart opens up. As if she's willing, the lighthouse might guide her to a place she never expected to find, where the past entwines with a bright new beginning. Cozy fans, grab a chair with a view of a lighthouse and sit down today with The Lighthouse Keeper by Cynthia Ellenson, a mystery of the past and the present. This is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper. For more of my suggestions on the mysteries you should not miss, go to our webpage, www.radio-joyonpaper.com, and click on Book Buzz. That's radio-joyonpaper. Rita Moreau, buzzing off for now.
Okay, that's nice. I love Rita Moreau. She always has a great idea for a book that you should get, and I suggest that you have a look at her recommendations, which will be on our webpage. And I am going to be launching a new webpage in January, one that's really dynamic and will have videos and all sorts of exciting things. So I'll let you know when I get that up because I am working on it myself with a little bit of help, but it is a big deal to, I don't know. A lot of things to learn. There are a lot of things to learn. That's one thing I can say when you are doing your own web page. Now, I also want to, again, just mention again the guy who helped me free of charge yesterday, which is really nice because I'm sure he charges like, if he was just doing freelancing, he'd charge like $125 an hour or something like that because he's worth his weight in gold. And his name is Chris Huffnagel, and you can find him. He's a website developer in Clearwater, but he will work with you all over the country. So I hope that you will check him out. And particularly writers, I know that many of you have problems when you're trying to set up a website. You don't know exactly what you need to do on it. And it helps if you go to a professional and get it done right. I have to go now through all of this redoing my website because in my case, I have now interviewed over, oh my goodness, this is my 101st program for the year. And with the like 2.5 years that I've been on now, we have, I think I have over 400 interviews, 400 different people. So it's a massive amount of data that I have to have on my website, unlike most of you. So and it's growing because I'm getting more and more interviews all the time. As a matter of fact, yesterday I got this big pile of books from one of the publishers, and I want to thank all the publishers for sending me these books. And I want to thank all of you indie authors. If you have a book that you want me to review and you want to come on the program, all you have to do is send it to me. You can go to my website. It's radio-joyonpaper.com, and there are instructions there how you can send me your book. And I do read a lot. I read fast, which is good because I am now getting so many books. But I do have, and it's funny, I do have this wonderful, wonderful mind. I will say that about my mind, that I have this way that I can retain a lot of what I read. And sometimes I can actually, not only do I remember where I read the book, I can sometimes remember what I was eating or drinking while I was reading the book. And I can also sometimes remember the exact page that something is on. It's not a photographic memory. I don't remember the whole book, but if I find a passage or a part of a book that I really like, I can actually visualize that page. So I'm lucky. I mean, that is why actually when I started Joy on Paper, I had no radio experience, and I had no book publishing experience, and I had never worked with any literary agents or any authors. The only thing is that I had read at least 10,000 books, and I can say that confidently because at one point in my life, when we were still living in Houston, I had about a little over 6,000 books. And when we moved from Houston, my husband was sort of like hoping, like not say we have to move all of them. And so what I did is actually I weeded out all of my paperback books and I gave them to different charity organizations. And so if they got a dollar for a paperback, they made like $2,000 because I had over 2,000 paperbacks. I got rid of the paperbacks, and I know my husband was very happy because the remainder of the 4,000 books fit in one of those U-Haul trucks. And so he was happy about that because he drove the U-Haul truck with the books. We sent the furniture by whatever, but the books, he actually drove the truck while I drove the car when we came from Houston to Florida. So I know that I had at that time over 6,000 books. I now have around 4,000 books. Well, I have, but it's again growing weekly because I get so many books from authors. But I do appreciate it, and I do love to read. And so if I like your book, like what happened here when I started reading The Infinite Now, that first chapter is really an example of a first chapter that grabs you. Everything is in there, that first chapter. There was enough backstory there, a little bit of why this girl is an orphan, who is this old man, it was just done so well that once you read that first chapter, you know you're not going to put that book down because it's well done. And that's what every author has to do. They have to really work on that first chapter because, generally speaking, if you're looking for an agent, that's all they're going to read. And if they don't get it in that first chapter, you're not going to get an agent. So I really commend both of these authors, Mindy Tarquini and Kathleen Opiella, because they both got great opening chapters, and that's why I read their books. So again, what I want to tell everyone is that lots of things are happening, and I hope that you will remember to order a MyPillow for yourself and for your friends and family. A wonderful Christmas gift, and use promo code PATZI. And then at the beginning of the year, I'm going to have some wonderful agents coming on the program, and I'm trying to pick agents for different genres. I have got two agents who specialize in children's books. I have one agent who particularly likes sci-fi, and paranormal and fantasy. And so then of course I've got some agents who are looking for thrillers and more realistic type of novels. So I'm trying to get a nice range of agents on in between all of the writers so that the agents can give you some advice on what they want in a query letter, what they are looking for, about the importance of having a platform and all of that. So it's going to be fun to talk to all of these agents. And meanwhile, I just, you know, want again to thank all of you who have sent me messages. I did not realize how many messages I was going to get. I am still actually plowing through the messages I got during Hurricane Irma. I had almost, I think, 2,000 messages when I, you know, we were without electricity for over a week. And when I logged back on, I nearly fainted because there were 2,000 messages. And I particularly want to thank Gloria from Idaho. She sent me this lovely, lovely long email. She was worried about the hurricane. And of course, she's never experienced a hurricane up there in the woods of Idaho. And so she was, you know, watching the news and hearing all the bad stuff and was worried about us here in Florida. And of course, we are very lucky that it wasn't as bad as it could have been. And so we didn't have to, although I did move 400 books out of my living room and it was rather exhausting. So I'm hoping that we don't have another hurricane around here for a long, long time. But I do also want to remind you that, you know, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken on stage or screen or in an audible book. And look at what happened here with Kathleen Opiella. She became a widow and she started writing. Mary Higgins Clark also became a writer because she had to support her children. And another author who was telling me that she started writing simply because, again, she had a job that she loved, and because of an injury, she was no longer able to do it. She didn't have the facility to continue her work. And so she was sitting there for actually months, feeling very bad, feeling very sad for herself because she could not do the job that she thought she would be doing for the rest of her life, and a surgical nurse. And so because she knew that she could no longer do that, she had almost given up. And then one day she just started writing. And she, because of a problem with her hand, because she couldn't actually use one of her hands very well, she started dictating straight into Word. She got that nice program, I think it's Dragon, and she dictated her book. So there's all sorts of things that you can do in order to get yourself published and a book out there. So just take some time and start working, and that's what you can do. And remember, don't let anyone steal your joy. Treasure it and share it and say something nice to somebody today. I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Big Ed. And he's saluting me, and I'm saluting him. So that's it. Enjoy yourself today. Be safe out there. Bye-bye.